Today, we're going to start the show off by spacing out. No, not that kind of spacing out. There, that's better. Now fly back in your memory to the first time you saw the 1997 film Contact. You might remember this pivotal scene. Jodie Foster, playing alien-hunting astronomer Ellie Arroway, lies on her car hood with huge headphones on her ears in a field of towering white satellite dishes. She's waiting for something, a signal. She lies still, her eyes closed. And suddenly, the sounds of something, someone beyond the Earth, communicating with her. What follows is a rush of excitement as Arroway directs her team over a walkie-talkie as she rushes for the institute that hunts extraterrestrial life.
56.2 seconds! Declination plus 36 degrees, 46 minutes, 56.2 seconds!
Well, that was just a movie based on the novel Contact by Carl Sagan. But the character of Ellie Arroway was not all fictional. It was based on a real-life female astronomer, Jill Tarter. Tarter's a pioneer for American woman astronomers and the outgoing director of the SETI Institute, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Since she was a little girl, she's been fascinated by what else or who else is out there, and she still is. She came by our studios to talk about what it is she's looking for.
At optical wavelengths, the kind of thing your eye is sensitive to, what we're looking for is very short, very bright, intense flashes of light. This would happen if someone focused a laser into a large mirror and sent a signal our direction. It doesn't appear to be something that nature can produce, these very short, less than a billionth of a second long flashes of light. But our technology in the 21st century does that with relative ease. Perhaps they're doing that to attract our attention as well. In the radio, we're looking for, again, a kind of signal that nature can't produce. But in this case, instead of looking for short features in time, we look for features that are compressed in frequency. So if you can imagine a radio dial with all kinds of different channels running up and down the dial, nature puts its output when it does radio emission. It covers many, 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 many channels. But what we're looking for is a signal that's in one channel only. Frequency compression, the kind of thing that technology can do. But again, astrophysics does not seem to be able to.
Have we heard or found either of those?
We have had false positives. We have had, we find in the radio, we find signals all the time. But they're like this radio broadcast. They're our own, yes.
We're messing up your work for
that's
you.
Right. You're a source of interference for us. But continue. It's a good cause.
So what makes us so sure that there is something out there?
I'm not sure. It's a question, and it's a question that humans have been asking all throughout recorded history. We've looked up and we've wondered whether or not we're alone. And in the past, we'd ask the priests or the philosophers or the shamans, whoever we thought was wise, and they'd tell us what we should believe. Well, in the middle of the 20th century, we suddenly had at our disposal these tools for radio astronomy that actually evolved out of the radars we developed for World War II. And suddenly now, these tools could allow us to do an experiment, could allow us to make observations to try and find out what the answer is, not what somebody tells us to believe. And so for me, that was a phenomenal transition in human history. And I got hooked with the idea that now we could really explore the cosmos, asking this old question in a scientific way and systematically try and see if we could find an answer.
So let's go back in time. As a child, were you the kid who was always looking up at the stars in the sky and wondering about artificial intelligence and aliens and Martians? And what kind of child were you?
I was the kind of kid, see, I'm pretty old, so my childhood coincided with early television. So early television programming had these Saturday morning programs with Flash Gordon.
Flash, savior of the universe.
Going around and flying from one culture to another, one civilization to another among the stars. So I think I absorbed the concept that other stars are going to be suns for other individuals. That up there, some of those stars were going to have planets around them, and some of those planets were going to be inhabited. That was my worldview, my mindset. You know, when I was a little kid, even commercials on radio, on television, had these little scientific factoids stuck into them. Like when I was 6 or 7, I learned that the sun is 93 million miles away, and it takes minutes for the sunlight to get from the star to the Earth. And I learned that from a Raisin Bran commercial.
Raisin Bran. Raisiniest Bran under the sun.
That's me.
Right? I think we should be doing this thing, kind of thing again. I think we should be using entertainment vehicles to help educate. And instead, we turned science and understanding how the world works into a boring list of things you've got to learn and memorize about old white dead guys, among other things, as opposed to trying to promote science by letting young people know that it's living in a mystery. It's trying to solve puzzles, answer questions that no one else has been able to answer before. It's about not having to grow up, not having to stop asking why.
You feel like a child today?
Every day. It's one of the real benefits of having a career as a scientist. You get to learn something new almost every day. And you get to keep asking questions. Not only that, but you're encouraged to try and find the answers.
Have you, over the years, met people who haven't taken your work seriously and who would equate it to, you know, science fiction or just not take it seriously?
Oh, well, but you know, the best science fiction turns into reality after not too long. Science fiction is a way of dreaming the future.
Behind this strange signal is an alien intelligence that knows all.
Yes. When I tell people what I do, there's one of two reactions. One, they think it's fabulous. It's really interesting. Or two, they think, for whatever reasons, no chance. Doesn't exist. Not out there. Waste of time. Early on, particularly, we were continuously confused with UFOs and alien abductions and other pseudoscience nonsense. What we tell people is that if we ever make a claim that we have detected evidence of someone else's technology, we will show you some pretty incredible evidence for that claim. We will be able to provide data that are irrefutable. That is not the case with the UFO communities and the alien abduction communities.
Do you think, do you feel that, like, are you annoyed by them?
I am always disappointed when I talk to people who are so ready to believe something marvelous and spectacular without any documentation.
But don't you want that to be true?
No, I want to know what the actual reality is. I'm a scientist. The universe can be this way or that way. It doesn't matter what I think or want or believe. It is one way or another.
On that day that the tools work and something is detected, what will change for us?
Well, it's kind of like the continuing Copernican revolution, right? Copernicus took the Earth out of the center of the solar system. And as we've pursued astronomical investigations of the cosmos, we realize that our sun isn't anywhere near the center of our galaxy. And our Milky Way galaxy is only one of hundreds of billions of galaxies in the universe. So we are not the center of anything. And I think that continuing, if we were to find that indeed there are other intelligent species in the universe created by the same laws of chemistry and physics that led to life and intelligent life on this planet, I think that would just be another step along this path of taking us out of the center of things. And you know what? I think that would be a good thing.